He was seized by a sudden urge to whip the piece of river glass over the brink. To hell with Haytham and White Rose and the Halfpenny Spider. To hell with the Jackdaw and with Paul's perennial effort to scoop his soul out of the fire. To hell with Cat's Eye and the Magpie and his dead man's eye that still loomed in Lee's nightmares. To hell with all of it. He didn't throw it. He stood there at the edge of oblivion with the totem pressed to his mouth, listening for the secret she'd whispered into its cloudy green depths. He heard nothing. What is up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode. Where we last left off, Elias has Amatha arrested in order to draw Haytham out of hiding. That is a pretty massive spoiler, so if you missed that episode or any other, I will have a link to the full playlist down in the episode description, so you can check that out there, along with a couple of short recap videos just to give you a sense of where we are in the story. Alright, I am super stoked for this episode. We have a ton of story threads all coming together. I will catch you guys at the end of the episode. I'm Josh Call, and this is Last Coliseum. The crisp night air was a welcome relief after bouncing nauseatingly along the cobbles, breathing his own sweat in the cramped carriage. He would sooner have walked, but the gray man was adamant. The last thing they needed was for Haytham to get picked up by cloaks so close to what they were after. He kept his head bowed low and his hood drawn as he stalked under the great stone arch into the gardens. No telling who might be watching. Thick, flowering vines draped over the sides of earthen planters that hung on chains from the high arches. It reminded him, though he'd never been there, of the verdant islands he'd heard studded the trade waters out on the eastern sea, where coursers were rumored to berth their ships and stow their hoards. The vines trailed across his shoulders as he pressed through their curtain, like the unspoken invitation of a whore in the window of her pleasure house. The night was warm, and the air was thick with the calls of night birds and the buzz of flying insects. Haytham slapped one to a pulp against the side of his neck as he waded between the pools of greenish light thrown by the sparse lanterns that dotted the flagstone walkways. He wasn't quite drunk, but he was well on his way. It was the only thing, besides a few drags from one of Kingmaker's sweet milk cigarettes, that gave him any relief from the pulsing headache that began in his temples and radiated down to his clenched jaw. It had been this way for days, ever since the Gray Man had broken the news to him that the bastard had taken Amatha. He'd been almost blind with fury, and the spider's man had had to interpose himself between them to be sure that Haytham wouldn't try to kill the messenger. He'd been shaking so badly that he almost couldn't read the note that White Rose had sent on to Kingmaker. "He's given you a day to turn yourself in," murmured Brayden as the words on the page swam before his eyes. The note made it painfully clear what would happen if he didn't hand himself over to the keepers. Am would be taken before the magistrate, where the governor's justice would see her stripped, whipped, and hanged on the sanctuary steps. "He's bluffing," Kingmaker had insisted, lacking his usual sardonicism. Randall had stayed standing between them. "He's taken her because he's afraid to face you on open ground. In a way, this is... it's a sign that the letters are working." The brawler thought he'd come dangerously close to saying, "This is a good thing."
"So what do we do?" Haytham said through his teeth.
The gray man's answer was, infuriatingly, the same as ever, to keep sitting on his hands.
"He's not gonna have her killed before fading," he'd said of White Rose.
The duel was still 3 days away. Even if he could get her in front of the magistrate before then, it'd be at least a turn before the scaffold goes up.
"But it's not going to get to that," he continued quickly before the image of Am swinging from a gallows could sit for too long in the brawler's mind.
"Because the moment he harms one hair on her head, he loses his leverage. He's trying to make us blink."
"I'm not letting her rot in jail," the brawler snarled.
"We're gonna get her out," Kingmaker promised, his hands upraised as if he were calming a spooked horse.
"You're not facing him so long as he has her. I wouldn't let you."
The brawler bristled, and before he could respond, the spider added, "She's his guarantee.
If you face him and he dies..."
"He understood."
"She dies,"
Haytham grunted. The gray man nodded.
"So why does he not want to fight?"
murmured the sellsword, his hooded eyes never leaving the brawler. Kingmaker laced his fingers behind his head and leaned back in his chair, looking past the Kadari up at Hatham.
You've always had a little wild in you. Get in the pit with your blood up, no telling what you might do.
He said it a little wistfully. It was exactly that, Hatham knew, which had caught the gray man's attention in the first place, so many long years ago.
Even if it kills the girl, he added under his breath.
Hatham advanced a step toward the spider, his long shadow spilling across his desk. Randall caught him with a hand on the brawler's chest.
How do we get her out?
The gray man held up two long, manicured fingers.
Two options. You can do as he says, turn yourself into the gray cloaks and hope that he makes good on his promise not to string her up next to you.
He made a face.
Or we can do this right, and in 3 days you'll meet him in the field and let God decide between you.
3 days. And now, one. His teeth were on edge. He'd hardly slept since Kingmaker had shown him the bastard's ultimatum. He couldn't help but think about what miseries Amitha must be suffering in her cell because of him.
I'm coming, Am, he whispered in his heart.
They'd started planning the very hour that Hatham had read the letter. He and the sellsword would have to sneak into the jail, find Am, cut her loose, and make it out again, all without tipping off the garrison of keepers patrolling the compound. It had taken a considerable amount of time and coin for Kingmaker to leverage enough of the cloaks in his pocket to find out where they'd jailed Amitha, and even more to ensure that those keepers would be the ones on duty during the last watch. But if it worked, and there was always fickle luck that green-eyed harpy to contend with, they'd have a clear path out of the jail and into the budding dawn. And then, White Rose. He stepped out from under the canopy of low, leafy branches and into the wide clearing. Already the crowd was massing for tomorrow's fight. He saw a number of lean-tos erected along the flagstone path that encircled the quadrangle, and still more bedrolls stretched out on the grass under the open sky. There were several stone braziers glowing around the periphery, and around each of these were clustered the dirty, eager faces of tomorrow's spectators with their hands low over the coals. He pulled his hood low over his head and gave a wide berth to the braziers. He didn't doubt that many of these folk could have given half a damn for either of tomorrow's combatants. These were the sort of vicarious thrill chasers who crowded the steps during a hanging, or else who staked out their spots days in advance to watch from neighboring rooftops. But of course, there'd be among them admirers of the Reaper and, worst yet, loyalists to the bastard. It was better that he not let himself be seen. His gaze flitted along the periphery, hunting for ghosts in the shadows and among the creeping vines under the overgrown balconies. Randall had already marked out days ago the likely places where White Rose might try to stow a cutthroat in case the fight turned against him. Even if he fought fair, the Brethren might not take chances. And if they did, there was always the chance that some piss-drunk minor lord might try to make his name by plugging him with one of those silly toy crossbows while the brawler's back was turned. He was nervous. He'd kept to the shadows since he came back to the edge. Before that, he'd spent a 7 year as insubstantial as a memory. This was the first time that he'd emerge fully into the light of day, under the eyes of God and all his enemies. And perhaps the last. He was skirting the radius of light around one of the braziers, just a black mass moving across the semi-darkness, when a familiar voice caught him. One of the figures huddled around the fire peeled off and shuffled toward him, the nimbus of firelight throwing his lanky frame into sharp relief. He was stooping and leaning on a staff, but his voice betrayed him for a much younger man.
"I said," he murmured, sweeping off his hood and shaking loose his shaggy dark hair, "do you know where I can find quail's eggs?"
The brawler could feel heat rising in his belly. Even in the near darkness, he could see that irritating little smirk on the boy's face. He looked a damn sight better than he had in the old woman's sickbed, but that wasn't saying much. His blackened eyes were only half-healed, and the skin on half his face was raw and peeling. He didn't say anything as Lee limped toward him, pausing just a few feet outside the brawler's reach. He dropped his voice by half.
"I was hoping I'd find you."
Hatham was gauging the distance between them, wondering how much the big show of limping the boy had made was an act.
There was just enough whiskey left in his bloodstream to consider lunging across the gap and breaking his stupid nose. Again.
Here I am.
You're fighting him tomorrow, the boy observed, not quite meeting Hatham's eye. With swords? Hatham didn't answer. At Kingmaker's direction, he'd been training 4 hours a day with an old swordsman who in his past life had been a mercenary captain with the Seraphs. Are you ready? He still didn't respond. Beneath his cloak, his chest and arms were a mess of bruises. The old goat had dismembered him 6,000 times in the turn since Brayden had started putting up the letters. I want to help.
The brawler almost scoffed. You've done enough, he rumbled. Go home, Lee.
I mean it. You've done a good turn for me, the boy said, scuffing his feet against the flagstones. A few good turns.
Call us even,
Hatham replied. More than once, as they'd been planning their infiltration of the jail, he'd remembered the boy's unique skill set and considered how much easier it all would be if they could bring him in. He recalled the way that things had gone at the Hinter Inn, even fighting back to back with the sellsword. He didn't like their odds of carving their way through the garrison and pulling out Amitha if things got loud. For all his faults, Lee was well-versed at making sure they didn't. But he was much too proud and still too angry to ask, and even with the boy offering his help, Hatham knew he'd never trust him. That ship had sunk, and where it had been there was only still deep water. He gave his back to the boy and started toward the stone arches with their hanging planters. Lee's voice followed him. That's it. You could die tomorrow.
Only if he's lucky,
the brawler murmured under his breath. The boy hurried after him. What's that?
Hatham grunted. Stay out of my way.
He had enough to be worrying over. The old Seraph had warned him that White Rose was as accomplished a swordsman as any in the keep. Hatham had plenty to fret about without wondering whether all their best-laid plans would fall apart on the shoulders of the boy. He'd been burned by the thief once already. Once was enough.
We're done.
Hatham! The brawler grit his teeth and lengthened his stride. The last thing he needed was for Lee to be shouting his name loud enough for the whole garden to hear. He felt a tug on his sleeve and heard his name again, softer this time. He turned, glaring. The blotchy bruises on the boy's misshapen features looked black in the dancing light from the nearest lantern. But worse yet was the pathetic expression he wore. It was almost enough to wring sympathy from the brawler's heart. I'm sorry. Lee murmured, his eyes shining in the flickering green light. The jackdaw, the fat man. I'm sorry. Hatham didn't answer. He turned on his heel with his teeth clamped like a vice and continued through the archway. Lee hobbled in front of him, catching the brawler by his lapel. If you'll just let me explain.
You don't need to explain,
Hatham grunted, brushing past the boy. He heard the boy clopping after him on his crutch. If I didn't, he would have come after Paul. He swept past the brawler, cutting him off again at the top of the stone steps that led down into the city. I tried! Hatham kicked the staff out from under him, and he went down hard. He rolled down the first two steps and lay sprawled in a heap, his arms and legs sticking out at awkward angles. The brawler felt another pang of sympathy, but it was of a detached sort. He stepped over him on his way down the steps.
We're even, boy. Leave it at that.
Lee came up groaning and cursing under his breath. Hatham ignored him. Do you even care about the bodies you leave behind? Lee spat. Or do you just move on too fast to see who gets hurt? Me? Amitha? He might have listed more, but he never got the chance. The brawler was up the steps, yanking the boy to his feet by his lapels before her name was fully out of his mouth. Their faces were inches from each other. Hatham smelled liquor on the boy's breath.
Keep her name out of your mouth,
he snarled. The boy didn't flinch. Will you be thinking of her when he's cutting you to pieces? The brawler shoved him back. It was all he could do to keep from pitching Lee headfirst down the stairs. The boy's foot caught on the next step up, and he fell on his ass on the stairs.
Don't let me see you again.
Hatham spat as he turned on his heel and swept down the stairs. He heard the thief spit on the ground behind him.
Don't worry. You won't.
Lee pushed himself to his feet and watched him go. His hands were balled into fists, the red noose of guilt around his neck turned to ash by his anger. He waited until Red Ugly had dissolved into the night dark, then limped down the steps and recovered his staff, wincing and cursing under his breath with every step. A dozen choice insults for the brawler raced through his mind with increasing venom. He was the same as Paul. Everything was black and white, friends or enemies. Why couldn't either of them understand that sometimes you didn't have any choice? You may do with what you had. He'd made the best of bad circumstances, and he hated himself for it. And after, he'd done everything he could to make it right with the Reaper. And in the end, it was Lee who'd paid for all of it, with the Jackdaw, with the sellsword, and now with Haytham. He was tired, and his ribs ached, and he felt terribly alone. When the moment came, none of the things he'd planned to say to Haytham had come out. Aye, he'd apologized, in his way, but his sorries were tainted by excuses and justification. And the brawler wasn't interested in absolving him. He slipped his hand into his pocket as he made his way gingerly down the stairs, wincing with each step. His fingers found his old green glass totem he'd salvaged from under the loose floorboard. It was smooth and warm and flat like a dragon scale. The laudanum had dredged up ancient dreams from another boy's life. Ever since he'd come to after the Jackdaw, that cloudy piece of river glass had sparkled at the bottom of his thoughts like a pebble in his shoe. It wasn't until he left Paul's that he'd been able to limp back to his apartment and pry up the loose floorboard. The cachet glittered with all manner of worthless treasures, brass buttons and silver needles, a broken knife with a bone handle carved in the shape of a serpent. It was a habit he'd learned from the other boy and never quite gave up. There were a dozen such nooks scattered throughout the coppers whose locations had long since crumbled to dust in his mind. He'd taken the totem, rubbed it on his thigh until it shone like green fire, then pocketed it. He'd kept it with him since, something between a memento and a talisman. It was an ember in his hand, and he gripped it for dear life as he disappeared down an alley. The Golden Quarter had lately been bristling with greycloaks, and Lee didn't fancy his chances of outrunning them if they took an interest in him. He wasn't sure how he ended up at the secret place. The eldritch pull of the green glass totem drew him deep into the coppers, back to those old haunts whose memory they shared. He was still fuming over the brawler, and he didn't see where his feet were leading him until he saw the gap between the rooftops up ahead like the missing fang in a monster's maw. He hadn't been back in years. His last memory of the place sat hard and sour in his gut. After Paul had taken him in, he'd tried hard to forget everything that came before. The memories came flooding back as he worked his way gingerly on to the wrought iron gate and over the eave. His ribs throbbed as he squirmed up the slick tiles, and he might have abandoned the effort if giving up wouldn't mean rolling back over the brink and spiking himself on the gate's rusty teeth bristling below. He crested the peak with monumental effort, then slid the last stretch before landing in an ungainly heap at the edge of the secret place of secret places. There was no sign that he'd ever been there. When the spring rains came, they came hard. Sudden sky-opening deluges like Cirrus had dumped a bucket over the Westerlands. 5 years of rains had obliterated any trace of him from his old hideaway. He wasn't sure what he'd been expecting to find, but a sudden sadness clenched him in the bottom of his gut. He looked out over the Hinter, pale and fragmented below the blue-black sky, the Jaxum an inky ribbon unfurling across her flat expanse. The moon low and red and pregnant over all of it. He was seized by a sudden urge to whip the piece of river glass over the brink, to hell with Haytham and White Rose and the Halfpenny Spider, to hell with the Jackdaw and with Paul's perennial effort to scoop his soul out of the fire, to hell with Cat's Eye and the Magpie and his dead man's eye that still loomed in Lee's nightmares, to hell with all of it. He didn't throw it. He stood there at the edge of oblivion with the totem pressed to his mouth, listening for the secret she'd whispered into its cloudy green depths. He heard nothing. Nothing but the in and out of his own breath. He turned to go and saw the clever nook with the missing tile. It was tucked under the overlapping eaves and was perhaps the only corner of the secret place that had been spared the heat and the wind and the rain in the intervening years. It gaped at Lee like a dark, unblinking eye, and he thought he saw something tucked inside. He knelt down and reached gingerly into the hole, ready to yank his hand out if something bit him. His fingers grazed something soft and brittle, like the vellum pages of some ancient manuscript. He held his breath and eased it out with two fingers. It was flowers. Long dead and bound with a scrap of black silk ribbon, the petals crumbled like ash between his fingers. She'd been here. His cat's eye queen. He heard himself breathe her name for the first time in years. Vanna. He felt numb and tingly like after three fingers of whiskey, not quite drunk but well on his way. He was smiling, and it hurt, but he was still smiling. He felt lighter than he had in a long time, for a moment, just a moment. He thought he heard the faintest susurrus issue from the heart of the green glass totem. He pocketed it and crept back down the way he came, chased by a sudden strong wind rising off the hinter. It blew grit into his eyes and his hair into his mouth. He was relieved when he finally touched down on the cobbles, found his staff where he'd left it, and began his slow trudge back to his apartment above the smithy. He left behind the green glass totem, tucked between the eaves in the clever nook where the wind and the rain wouldn't find it. But if he was lucky, she would. Vanna. He was smiling the whole way home. He hardly felt his aching face. Thank you guys so much for listening. It really is a privilege to be able to share this whole story with you, whether you've been following from the beginning or if you've just started listening in the last few weeks. We are quickly approaching the end of Act 2, so I am very excited to be wrapping this section of the story up in the next couple of episodes. As always, it is a huge help if you leave a like or a comment on the video, if you leave a review if you're listening on podcasts, or if you just text one of your friends and say, hey, this story's dope, you should check it out. Either way, I will catch you guys next week, same time, same place. I'll see you there.